She there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, so the Pizza Man story was you know, number one, if you knew Ivan on a personal level, he, like I told Matt, he was a sensational storyteller. And I mean, an absolute sensational storyteller with conviction. And
I absolutely believe it now. I do.
That was his personality. He was a great salesperson, you know. Do I think he had the capability of doing what he did? If you asked me before this all this happened, absolutely not, you know. But he was kind of a nerdy guy. He was always seeking, you know, he was kind of a high-strung, wiry personality, very fast talker. You know, he's always in a rush to get things done and not a lot of couth to get those things done. But nonetheless, he would come across very professional at times, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but when there were these stories he had to tell you to lay in some extra conviction, I mean, they were just elaborate. They were great. And if you didn't know him, you would fall for it, hook, line, and sinker. And it's just, you know, so when he revealed this crazy story about a pizza man, oh, man, it's just like you could almost see it unfolding, you know, as he's telling us on the phone. And that's what I told the detectives. I said, hey, man, y'all need to get over here and listen to this dude's story. At the time, I really felt, so, you know what, if anybody knows who did it, it's going to be I, because it sounds like he has a lot of information. But when he started unfolding about this pizza man story that looked like John Travolta with the Domino's pizza suit, I mean,
yeah,
that was classic Ivan region. I mean, everything he's ever told anybody about has been sensationalized by either his dreams, fantasies rather, and obviously depictions from certain movies.
So I kind of got this feeling that, like, when he tells a story, there's always bits of truth in there. And I feel kind of like this story he told, I don't feel like the pizza man's real, but I do feel like maybe he owed money to somebody.
That Ivan owed money to somebody?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he might have, you know, he may have, I don't know. You know, and it's very possible, you know, because at that time he was into a lot of X, a lot of GHB stuff that was going around in 2000 in the North Dallas area. And for the scenes that he was always at, you know, he mentioned that Club 7, so that was a very popular nightclub where a lot of people, it was the 2000 version of a, what was that, Club 52 or something like
Studio
that.
Studio 54.
Know. Yeah, Studio 54. So, but there's a lot of cocaine, a lot of GHB, a lot of ecstasy, a lot of swingers, you know, that type of crowd, and that, you know, he was attracted to stuff like that. And those are the kind of women he was attracted to. So, I mean, you know, I never really thought about it that way. But, yeah, there's a possibility he owed somebody else some money. But I don't think it was going to be money in the tens of thousands of dollars. You know, he was a user.
You don't know anything about James ever lending Ivan any money?
I don't know. I mean, James has helped him out and bailed him out, you
mm-hmm.
know, a few times, you know, before all that had happened.
In what way?
You know, with just financial problems that Ivan had, you know, when he was down on his luck, you know, James just felt compelled to help him and almost obligated because that's his cousin, you know.
Right.
And, you know, that's the kind of guy that he was, you know. If you needed some help, he's going to help you, you know, but there's always going to be, you know, some terms. Hey, man, you got to pay me back or you're going to have to, and you know, get your head out your ass and start working or start doing something, you know. And
how much do you say, are we talking though? Like,
I don't know how much he gave maybe at times, you know, and he might have given him 500 to 1,000, but I can't.
Never 20,000?
No, I never think nowhere in that range. Hell, there's no reason to give him that much money. There's absolutely no, I don't think there's any reason that James would be compelled to give him $20,000 and he's not working and bringing in any money. And if he did, I don't know. I never knew about it. Maybe Ivan would have asked him for some money to start up a little business, start up something. I just don't see James taking that risk and giving him that money, knowing that he was, you know, he was a user at that time, you know, and for fear that that money would just be blown. He just wouldn't trust Ivan with that kind of money, you know, maybe $500, $1,000 to, you know, pay his bills, pay his debt, and well, he don't have to worry about it. But, you know, I remember one time he had him working up there with us at the mortgage company, you know, he really didn't want to at first. James didn't want to hire him up there to come work with us, but he just felt that we could all make him learn something from him. But at the same time, he's like, dude, you know, if we get him up here, you know, I have a man, he only talks a lot of shit. You know, I don't want him talking to the customers that way and feeding them under a false pretense that we're going to do this and we're going to do that and then get ourselves in trouble. He was concerned more about the integrity of the business than he was about the money to be earned. Knowing the Ivan's situation with his own mortgage company a couple, 2 or 3 years prior to that, out of control. And so, but he had experience. But that he came on for a few weeks maybe that I can remember, and then that was the end of it. I don't know exactly why, but I can't say. It could be a multitude of reasons, I'm sure. I just think that it didn't work out for him the way but he did work up there for a little bit. I guess maybe Ivan could have been just washed up with that business, or he wasn't showing up. It could have been anything, you know.
Did Ivan ever get in trouble, with the mortgage thing? Was he ever, doing a scam or fraud or?
Yeah, he did a bunch of bad loans when he was with his own thing.
I'm sorry?
He had did some bad loans. He had, you know, some, I want to say, he had done a kind of fudge the numbers, and I think a lot of those loans came back on him. You know, at that time, his wife, at that time, I think her name was either Michelle or Amy, his first wife, you know, when shit started going bad for him and the money wasn't coming in, because he was living well beyond his means, extremely beyond his means. He had the big house in Beaufort in Frisco. He had he had several cars, a boat, jet skis. I mean, yeah, shit.
I can only find one car, a Corvette, under his name.
Under Ivan?
Yeah.
Man, he had a ton of cars, man.
Huh.
Yeah, he had some vehicles under his name. You know, and who knows, it might have been under someone else's name, you know, if his credit wasn't that good. Or, hell, he might have been using someone else's identity since he had all the access to all those identities, you know? That's just me speculating, though.
Well, that's just funny you say that, because I was kind of getting that feeling as well.
You know what I mean? But he was rolling. You know what I mean? He was rolling. You know, to be 23, 24 years old, 22, 23, 24 years old, and to own a $250,000 house in the year 1998 and have multiple cars, you know, that's not even an individual who makes $100,000 a year, which is great money, 22 years ago. Could have all that.
Do you think he was maybe dealing as well as fraud?
No. I think it's just, he's just a master manipulator. He was good with papers and numbers and, you know, and just working the system.
What about?
But I think just a lot of that stuff, man. But, yeah, I mean, all that stuff went down and his little life kind of, you know, all his riches kind of spiraled out of control. And he lost a lot of stuff. I got, in order to help him out, he had talked to James about, he had a 98 Mustang that was apparently in Sylvia Lane.
Yeah.
The payment was like 500 something bucks a month. And my credit wasn't the best then, but James thought it'd be a good idea for me to get that car, make the payments on it, at least a year or two to knock the balance down, and then go in for my own loan admission and then finance the rest of the bank. And I was like, yeah, I guess that is a pretty good idea. He goes, dude, just pay Sylvia her money. It'll drop the overall balance, and then when you get to about $15,000, go and apply for the loan.
So that car was in your name?
No, it was in Sylvia's name.
Sylvia's name.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. He had some automobiles, but looking back on it, you know, I guess not everything was in his name. But yes, the Mustang was in her name, and the plan was, you know, me take care of the payments to help them out. Take off that debt, and then finance the car under my own name through a bank when I could get to a qualifying level, which is the mark was about $15,000.
Okay.
So, you know, you're making a $500 monthly payment, that's $6,000 a year. You know, you got to assume that, you know, maybe high 300s, low 400 going to principal, and the rest is going to interest. So that would have paid at least $4,000 of that car in 1 year, which would have brought the note. Man, he, you know, I think he just fucked up. He was high as hell, did all that shit. And I guess he thought he could just talk his way through it and manipulate people's ideas and coerce them into thinking this was happening, this is happening. Because if you listen to all those tapes, all the phone calls that he did, not one of those phone calls was he ever crying, did he ever plead, Mom, I fucking didn't do this. He never once said, I didn't do it. He never sobbed, he never cried, he never grieved. He never said anything about, I thought, if I would have, anybody would have did that, if someone would have accused you of stealing a fucking carton of cigarettes, and you're calling somebody from a jailhouse, plead your ass, Mom, I swear to God, fucking do that. I swear to my life, I didn't do that. I would never do anything like that. He never did that.
Yeah, he never, the only time that I heard that he mentioned James was that if he were here, he would be helping him get out of this mess.
Yeah, but if you listen to 100 audio tapes from people from the jails that have been arrested who truly didn't do it, man, they're going to plead for their life on the phone. I didn't fucking do it. Please get me out of here. They're not going to give you already alibis. He had alibi one after another quick. He had stories for alibis. He never cried, and that's what I found really funny with it. Anybody who's in jail is going to cry, whether you did it or you didn't do it. I mean, anybody who's going to drop to their knees and beg for help, and they're going to make it verbally known, especially in the phone call with your mother and your aunt. Mom, you got to believe me, please. I did not. I would never kill my cousin.
Yeah.
Something's going on here. I swear to God, I didn't do this. But instead, he had this little timeline, and he inserted himself in these scenarios where, I was at James's house picking up the Corvette, and then I went back to get some, or I got the Mercedes and then the Corvette. Man, James ain't about to allow that dude to drive neither one of those cars. I'm telling you, man, he's not going to allow him to drive those cars, let alone two cars in the same night, because he's afraid somebody's going to come over to his house. So let me put a $5,000 Honda Accord out there. Maybe that'll scare somebody. Really? Come on, man. A fucking Honda, a little two-door Honda Accord ain't going to scare. If someone's going to come get you, they're going to come get you. It don't matter who's out there. I mean, think about that. I mean, some people got to use some common sense. Yeah, put your Honda Accord out here. That way they'll think somebody's here. Okay, buddy. Yeah, that's gonna deter anybody. Somebody. Man, and in his description of the suspect's vehicle, which was an old school box top Lincoln Town Car, well, I can tell you that probably all the mobsters in New York City in the early '80s, that's exactly what they drove. There's nobody in South Texas, whatever he was driving, 300-400 miles from South Texas in his hot ass home in the sun. Oh, no, I guess it was whatever. That was November, October. Nobody's driving a box top Lincoln, man. That's for the year 1990. I mean, for the year 2000, those cars are damn near obsolete. They belong to fellas in the hood, you know.
Yeah.
And not even then. I mean, he once again, it was just him trying to sensationalize the story. So these guys come. This dude comes to his apartment, fires off a round in his house, and he decides, in his best interest, that he's just going to go to fucking work and go to Super Salads and go make him $15 because you're getting, $6 because you're getting paid $2.13 an hour plus tips. He didn't tell his fiance. He never once called James. He didn't even call his mom. He didn't tell anybody. He just said, fuck it, I'm going to go to work and go make $2.13 an hour. Never mind, a man just came in and threatened my life and inadvertently threatened the life of my cousin. I'm not going to tell anybody. Fuck it. Come on, man. Nobody believes that. You got to be an ignorant person to really believe that story. Think about that. Someone comes in your house, Liz, and puts a gun to your head, and hey, I'm gonna go shoot your friend or your cousin, whoever the hell. And then, okay, sir, I'm sorry. We'll see what we can do. Then the suspect leaves, and what does Liz decide to do? She's just gonna go fucking go to work, because making $2.13 an hour is more valuable to you than your beloved friend. Let alone your cousin. But I'm going to withhold that information from my cousin. this death threat wasn't strong enough, even though they shot a round in his house. Come on, man.
There are so many things that just don't make sense in his story.
Well, because it's all made up shit, man.
Oh, yeah, I know. But I didn't know in the beginning.
If you knew this dude, man, if you knew this guy, and you don't have the privilege of knowing it, you know, and, I mean, you'll talk to me, I'm going to say these things. And I, you know, and I try to look at it so biased because he's the guilty person.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and if you don't know the guy, I try to look at it objectively, and I'm sure it's the first time you hear about the case from different people's perspective, but, you know, you kind of have to look at these things objectively, but at the same time, I mean, common sense will tell you, if somebody puts a gun to your head and threatens the life of a family member, and you decide in your best interest you're just going to go to work, come on, man. And then I'm going to go switch out this car and turn it into James's house twice in one night? Are you fucking kidding me? They're not about to get up in the middle of the night to trade out a car then again at 6 in the morning or whatever it was. Come on, man. No, he's not doing that. Number one, he's not going to drive off in neither one of those two cars for the sake of whatever the story. James would just, you know, if there was an imminent danger, if Ivan had really told him the story about, hey, there's this dude, he's going to do this, he's going to do that, blah, 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 I wholeheartedly assure you that James, if there was some for real danger, and would Ivan was telling the truth, he is not going to put Amy Kitchen's life in any danger. He would have just got out of the house and go rented a hotel, God knows where, and got with police to investigate this story. He's not going to put himself, let alone his beloved Amy, any kind of jeopardy, any kind of danger. Oh, there's a guy who's going to come kill me? And he came to your house, Ivan? Fuck it, I'm just going to stay at home. But park your Honda Accord outside. Come the fuck. Oh, man. You're not going to take those chances. If it was even true, which is obviously it's not. This is a story from Ivan that his whole thing, in my best opinion, was jealousy and envy and greed. He was going to go rob him. And he was so whacked out on everything and been up for days. I'm sure, you know, sleep deprivation, high, hallucinating on certain stuff, and just, you know, he just flipped out, man, to everybody's surprise. He flipped the fuck out, dude.
But, I mean, he was violent with his ex-wives before, right?
Yeah, he was violent with them. He beat them up. He was abusive, verbally and physically. He used to talk to his mom really bad as well.
Yeah, I heard that.
I mean, shit, man, I was with him in the U-Haul truck when he did it.
In the U-Haul?
I was in. He was moving. I can't remember if he was moving out of an apartment or to an apartment.
He was moving to Pear Ridge, and he said that he borrowed the Mustang.
No, no, no. He moved. He moved from these apartments. He lived at these apartments over off of Midway and Rosemead in North Dallas, and he moved from there to. He moved from there to Haverwood and the Tollway, and those are the apartments we moved him into. I never knew that he lived where they found the Corvette at. I never knew it.
You didn't know that?
No, I never knew he lived there.
When did you find out?
Whenever the detectives were asking me about it. Hey, do you know where we found the car at? I don't know where you found the car at. I mean, I've seen it on the news. And he goes, well, that's where Ivan is, you know, his cousin Ivan is living at. And I just thought at the time it was kind of odd. I thought, man, I don't know. I mean, I had no idea he lived there. I didn't know he lived that close to all of us.
What did you think when you saw in the news that it was recovered at the apartment complex?
You don't want to think the worst because you know the guy. You know what I mean?
Before you knew he lived there.
When they said they found the car?
Yeah.
And I just, when I seen the car in the news, and I haven't spoken with anybody, and on the news, it showed the vehicle at that apartment complex. I just thought somebody stole the car, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe like a carjacking. But if he was dead in the house, I was like, man, I wonder. You know, maybe these people came in and robbed his house, and they took off in the car and realized it was kind of an alarm system or low jack. They just said, fuck it, I'm going to leave it here.
Yeah.
But I didn't know he lived there until the detectives told me that.
Did you know it had a low jack? Like, was that common knowledge?
Well, it's a Chevrolet. I know where he bought the car at. He bought it from Reliable Chevrolet, where I used to work at.
Yeah, so I know that somebody there called the cops, and they were like, "By the way, there's a low jack. You can activate it." But I was just wondering if, like, maybe Ivan or their friend, you know, his friends knew.
I would think Ivan would know it. I mean, he's not dumb, but I would think, you know, that car has some kind of security system or a tracking system on it, you know?
Yeah.
But nonetheless, the car was found there. But even, like I said, I didn't know he lived there. So as the baseline information is being revealed, it was shocking because everything is pointing to him.
Yeah.
Although you don't want to believe it, because somebody you know, and then you're heart stricken from the death of two people.
Yeah.
You're saying that this guy, it's very confusing. It's surreal because you don't want to believe it, but you're trying to believe something so you can find peace of mind or what you want to find whoever did it. He's been there 20 years on death row, and still he has been there an incredibly long time, but it just shows his tenacity to work every angle and every resource that he can from within inside, you know, and whoever he can get to hear, because there's a lot of people who are, you know, they're advocates against the death penalty to get that. You know, his main thing is to get with people that are, you know, obviously pro-life as far as advocacy for the death row people, and that's his angle. And if he can fit a good story and put some compelling, doubtful information that'll get the listener, an unbeknownst listener, about who he is, man, you're going to believe him all the way. You're just going to. He's going to come across very solemn, very humble, you know, like, you know, something he said, I don't even speak Spanish, you know, so I cannot relate to the guys that are in here. Well, buddy, when you go to jail, you know, I would imagine you can't relate to everybody that's in there. You don't have to be from the hood to be on this road or to be a child molester, you don't see any of those things. Those people end up in jail too, man. You don't have to have a criminal record to all of a sudden be convicted of molestation of 13 boys, you know?
Yeah.
And it happens all the time. However, his stories, you know, if he gets the right listeners and he can convince them, which he can, he's great, man. You're going to listen to him and you're going to be compelled to weigh in on his side. I mean, you got to understand, he's rehearsed this for years. He has written this story, although he has to be careful because the story's already been written, so he can't go too far outside the lines. But whatever's between those lines, he has to find a way to sensationalize it and to get you emotionally attached. So once you're emotionally attached and emotionally charged up from the story, then he's got you hooked.
Yeah, Sylvia is playing quite a part, too.
Oh, yeah. She's a liar, man. There's a lot of shit she said on the tapes that we had at least. It's just a lie. A lot of shit that Tawny said was a flat-out lie when she said she had never – who was that? Oh, I think Sylvia said, and even Tawny said, they'd never had met Carlos. Like, man, that's a bald-faced lie, man. Because whenever Carlos met Ivan through James and I, and
mm-hmm.
Carlos at that time was looking to buy a house. Well, Ivan was in jeopardy of having that house foreclosed. Ivan was going to try to force the sale and use Carlos as a buyer and get him off the hook with the foreclosure. You see, Carlos went to got the address from James, and this is probably 1998, 1999, and Carlos and his wife drove over there to Beaucourt in Frisco to go look at this house. When he went inside the house, I don't know if Eric was there, but I know that Sylvia was there and Ivan was there. And he introduced him to him. Hey, Mom, this is Carlos. This is going to get him by his house. This is a real good friend of James and Anthony. And so she had met Carlos, and she knew when the house was finally sold that Carlos was the buyer. You know, Carlos at the time had a couple little watch stands or watch kiosks in the mall. He sold watches and watch repairs, and he had a couple of those little stands going in a couple of little malls. So I don't know how they got his phone number, but, I mean, I know there's ways to get people's phone numbers. I was laying at the house one night watching television, I'm sure, and I had a phone call. I don't know the number, so I don't answer it. And then a couple of minutes later, I had a text and said, hey, Anthony, this is Sylvia, Ivan Cantu's mom. When you get a moment, please phone me. I have a favor to ask you. And I was like, what the fuck, man? I haven't talked to this bitch in 20 years. What the fuck's going on? So what I thought was, oh, shit, he's up for execution. So I got on my laptop and I looked on there, and he wasn't on there. And I just, I was like, man, what could she possibly ask me of a favor to do, you know? And, you know, I'm thinking, obviously, it's going to be for Ivan. It's the only thing I could come up with. So I called Carlos. I was like, so, man, I'm gonna call her tomorrow. So I called her the next day. And so we talked for several minutes. And, you know, I don't want to talk shit to her about her own son, you know. And then she goes, well, the favor I had to ask of you. I said, oh, yeah, well, what you got? Well, I guess about a year ago, there was a newspaper article about Ivan. You know, he had another appeal that was denied. I had posted that picture on my Facebook, and it just, you know, and then people that we all went to school with, me and James, probably everybody, you know, everybody puts their comments on it. Anyhow, Sylvia didn't think that was very nice. I said, well, I'm not taking it down. If you don't like it, don't fucking look at it, man. I mean, the people you need to be speaking to is the U.S. Supreme Court and the Dallas Morning News, because they're the ones that published it, not me. And then nothing I did. You can go to any news station in the USA, you're going to find it. I'm just sharing it. So that was a favor. I said, well, with all due respect, I appreciate you asking me. And I can tell you this, that the chances of me taking that down are slim to nothing. However, you know, just to give you peace of mind, I will consider it. And that was it. I mean, I'm not taking that down, man. Stop it. Come on. And there's a lot of stuff that she said that's just... You know, it's...
So you know they've been pointing the finger at you and Carlos.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, man, this key situation that you're talking about, I was like, man, how come I'm the only one who didn't know about this key?
That it was supposedly on your key ring?
Right. How convenient. Why in the hell? How would I have anybody else's key ring on my own key ring? It just doesn't make any sense. And I guess they're saying that he had borrowed a car and he left his key on there. Something like that, I think, if I remember the story right.
Yeah.
Man, I'm telling you, man. Hey, man, he had never asked me for a key. I don't know about any key. There's so many twists. They're rehearsing their stories and looking at this story for so many years and just finding where they can plug in a little plug, you know? And I'm telling you, man, I didn't even know where this dude lived at, let alone have his key. That right there... is 100% a fabricated lie. It's just, I know, you know, and then at the beginning of the episode, she talked about Chris Head. What was Chris Head doing here? How strange is that? I mean, so Chris Head is a suspect. I'm a suspect. The roommate guy, which I don't know, I never knew about
Frank
that.
Frank Perez.
Frank yeah. Perez, Carlos, Amy Betcher, Amy Betcher. Right. I mean, all these people are suspects, but him. And there's another thing. Look, man. Let's entertain his story that Jones owed this guy, what was it, $200,000, $250,000?
Yeah, why not sell his car, his house?
Yeah, let's go ahead and go, you know what, let's go ahead and say this is true, okay?
Okay.
Let's assume that this story, Jones owes Gangster A $250,000 or his life is done. Why would this organization a rundown, dope fiend, Ivan Cantu, who can't even rub two nickels together and come threaten his life. If they know so much about James, why wouldn't they just briskly walk into his office and say, hey, buddy, or hey, asshole, you owe us a ton of money, and they can shoot a round off in his office, and we're going to kill you if you don't pay up the money. Well, James has assets, right?
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what. Guys, I don't have all that money, but I will sell my car tonight, both my cars tonight. I will get a loaner, and I will give you, $50,000 cash as a sign of good faith, and I will pay you X amount of dollars per month. I'm in the mortgage business. I'm making a lot of money. I can pay you off in a matter of 6 months with interest. That would behoove anybody versus killing somebody not getting any money back. That story is just preposterous.
He had to account for the bullet hole that he put in his own wall.
Yeah, so I was like, man, why? why would these, you know, whatever he called them, gangsters or cartellers or whatever, how would these dudes even know who the hell you are, Ivan? You're nobody, dude. You're nobody in general public, in general population, let alone to these dudes.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? So you're supposed to help your cousin. So, okay, so they did come to you, and they're threatening you. They know your name. They know your address. But you still negated to tell the one guy whose life was in danger? That just doesn't add up. And it's just his scrambled mind, as high as he was and everything on it, that's the best he could come up with under the influence and sleep deprivation that he'd been going through. That's the best story he could come up with, and it's trash. I mean, this is awful, man. Really, you owe somebody money, Liz, let's say you personally owe somebody $50,000, 50 grand, and you're making some pretty good money wherever you're working at, and you have some assets, and they're going to go see somebody who's down on their luck and threaten them to get money from you. Why wouldn't they just come to you? That has got to be the most ludicrous, preposterous story I've ever heard. The person that owes you the money, you don't go to them, you go to this guy? Whoever listens to these tapes, you can't possibly believe some bullshit like that. I'm like, really? That's the best you can come up with, man? That? And that's because he already said that story in the beginning 21 years ago. He has to stick to it. He fucked up. He has to stick to that story. And there's nothing you can do about it. You got to stick to that story, and because you got to stick to it, now you have to kind of sensationalize it. Man, ain't nobody killing nobody over some money. Seriously. Whenever they know that the guy that owes you the money, he owns a mortgage company or mortgage branch, and he's driving a Corvette and a Mercedes, you know he's got money. Maybe not all the money, if this story was even true. Anybody would rather take payments. I mean, hell, even if you owe money in your car, the bank will give you a chance. Hey, man, just get caught up with what you owe us, but, you know, just promise to pay back the rest of the loan. Not a problem. The bank ain't just going to come whack you. We're going to give you a chance. For James to allegedly owe this money to any of these people, no. That was just a story that he came up with under the influence, and it was a lousy one, but that's all he can go by. And then to sensationalize it, that's what did it over the top for us. Like, oh, no,
what did it over the top? Sorry, you cut out a little bit.
Whenever he described them as a John Travolta.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
like,
I think
really?
The John Travolta, Steven Seagal cross.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, again, this is him trying to sensationalize a character of toughness, of a gangster, a king, add to the story and get and maybe deflect any suspicion off of him, you know? But it was like, come on, man. So then you see the car drive away. Yeah. So this guy's got a gun to your head and all this stuff is going on, and you have the wherewithal to get up, go look for the car, and get information. But, and all that wherewithal that moment of wherewithal that you have, you never thought to call somebody and warn somebody. You never warned the one person they were after. Man, that's over the top right there. You decided to go to Super Salad and go clock in and go make $2.13 an hour. Never mind your fiance is down the street. What is that or whatever she was doing? She's got to come home too. What if these bad guys? What if John Travolta decides to come back while you're at Super Salads and your girlfriend walks back home and this dude's in there? You're not gonna warn her? I was like, man, when those stories hurt me, when the episodes first started coming out, dude, anybody who hears this, if they have half a blame, you've got to, this is bullcrap. If you just rationalize with yourself and look at it objectively, that makes no fucking sense. Ultimately, the weapon is found at your ex-girlfriend, at the drunken lady, it's at her house. But nobody takes responsibility for it. It just showed up. With your fingerprints and James' DNA.
Did she believe he was guilty this whole time until recently?
I haven't spoken to her, or let alone seen her. It's been 20, 21 years. So I have no idea what's on her mind. But, I mean, she's obviously, for Ivan.
Now she is. It sounded like she was, she kept saying he's innocent, and I found this comment she made where it was like, stop this, he's guilty, you know?
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
And so I said, if you think he's innocent, why did you post this, like, in 2017?
The storytelling that he went with, and then now that Matt and everybody is, you know, trying to go with that storyline, it's not hard to accept, and anybody can accept that as being anything less than a lie.
Did you know any of Ivan's friends?
No.
You didn't know Smiley?
No. As far as I know, it's a made-up name. I never knew any individual personal friends or acquaintances that he knew.
Kevin Partridge?
Never heard of, like I said, I never met any of the people he knew.
Okay.
We did not hang out. We didn't do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I even told Matt, I said, dude, this dude's such a sensational storyteller. There'd be nights. If there was still phone data, phone records from 20 years ago, 21 years ago, the record would show that this dude would call me up two or three times in the morning and wake me up and be like, hey, dude, where are you at? Motherfucker, I'm at home. So I'm thinking maybe he's an accident, you know? And he needs some help. And he's like, dude, you got to come out here to the whatever place, you know, hotel, this, that, and the other. I'm with, you know, three goddesses, or almost five goddesses. You know, they want to meet you, man. They are down. You know, I got one that looks like Brooke Shields, one that looks like Halle Berry. And they're all, he always put a celebrity name with everything. That's just the way he described things, you know? In order to say something, that was his way of getting you amped up. But I was like, man, I ain't about to do nothing. No, hell no. And then a few weeks go by, and he'll call you up, and I got things like that going on. So, man, one time I did decide to go meet up with him. And then I went to go meet up. Where did we meet up, man? Some bar. I walked in there, and I was like, where are these fucking goddesses you're talking about, bro? And we're like, dude, they're right here. I'm like, oh, dude, they're fucking trash, man. Stop it, man. Oh, dude, they're hot, aren't they? I'm like, buddy, I got to go, man. I'm about to stick around for this whole shit, man. But that's how he was. He would hook you in, man. It was kind of too irresistible. I mean, it sounded too great and too irresistible not to go see or investigate it. There was a handful of times I'd catch my, I'd be caught on the short end of the stick, not as he described it. He was awful, man. He was awful. He was funny because, this is pre convicted murderer.
Right.
He was
just,
he was kind of the laughing stock of all of us, He was a little guy, James was a little bit bigger. Some other things, Now, what's your name said that he was a big time Golden Glove boxer?
Yeah.
No, he was not. He never fought in the Golden Gloves.
Kelly says he did. That she couldn't watch him because it was too hard.
He participated in a couple of tournaments, but he never went to the actual Golden Gloves tournament that's held in Dallas.
Okay.
But I went to one or two of his matches because another friend of ours, Scooter, he was training with James too at the time. And, but they were just at a little YMCA, and this is where, you kind of work your way up to the YMCA, little bouts and tournaments. Matches, if you will, and then from there, in April is when you sign up to go to the Golden Gloves, and that Golden Gloves are held at the Convention Center in Dallas, and it's a big 2 or 3 day event.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he, to my knowledge, he never entered the actual Golden Gloves tournament.
Okay. Yeah, I know that he had entered some tournaments, but that he had never actually won the Golden Gloves. But there was, I knew that he was a boxer. He was training.
Yeah, James was just, he liked to consider himself a jack of all trades, athletically speaking. He was very competitive when it came to athletics. He thought he was going to go be a running back at Midwestern State University.
Wow.
I'm like, dude, you're at the time, I think he's maybe 21, 22, 23 years old. I'm like, dude, you understand these guys are graduating right now at the college level? You haven't ran a football, I don't know how many years, These dudes are generally 5'6" to 5'9", and they've got hamstrings and quads bigger than your waist, you know?
Yeah.
These dudes are the real deal, James. But that was always, you know, and it wasn't to be negative to him, but, you know, but he would take it as, he would just take it as almost as energy to go to, and he went. And he would go drive all the way up to Wichita Falls to go and try to compete for, you know, for a starting deal or, you know, to be in their lineup to, you know, not audition, but to try out for the football team. And then when that didn't go through, he's like, nah, dude, you know, it's fucking bullshit. I'm like, you think so, my brother? You got 18. I mean, I appreciate that. I mean, he is highly competitive and lots of tenacity.
Sounds like my dad. That's funny.
I mean, he was going to do it, you know. We used to play basketball all the time, you know, either 3-on-3, 5-on-5, with, you know, with guys at any local basketball deal. And I remember he wanted to, you know, he just met a friend of mine he had never met before. And Adam is he's 6'3", 232, at that time, 210 pounds. He's tall, and he is athletic, and he does play basketball. And we had a goalpost. And I remember James was like, hey, dude, you play basketball? He goes, I mean, anybody who plays basketball will tell you. If you ask, if they're really good at a sport, you ask them, hey, do you play basketball? They're going to always give you the same answer. I mean, a little bit. I hoop a little bit in the most modest way.
Yep.
A real player will tell you that.
Yeah.
Well, James was like, dude, I'll fucking pay you. I'll play you a game 2 out of 3 for 100. I can beat you. I'm like, what? And he was, I mean, but that's how he was, you know, it was all, you know, you had to admire his tenacity. And he was just, and I remember Adam had asked me and my other friends, he was like, man, this motherfucker, is he serious? I'm like, dude, I don't know, man. And James was talking a lot of smack. He was like, I'm fucking good, dude. I'm fucking blow right past you. And then he goes, you want, I go, I mean, I don't have any money. And I remember, I think somebody has said, I'll put the 100 up for you. He goes, all right, let's play. I mean, he obviously, he beat him, you know, 2 straight sets, and it was over. But, I mean, James, even though he lost, he would not bow his head down. He would just accept it. He's like, hey, dude, you're pretty good, man. I'm like, James, you're 5'10", dude, this dude's 6'3". He does this all the time, man. But, you know, it was just his competitive nature, you know, boxing, yeah. That. Just a lot of different things.
It's a jack of all trades, huh?
Yeah, I mean,
that's how everyone describes my dad, jack of all trades.
But he was competitive in that nature, and he was a savvy business guy, you know. I mean, he, you know, as a teenager in high school, he was a shift manager at Taco Bell for 2 or 3 years. You know, he worked there for a long time. And then from after his high school, when he graduated, he was a year before me. I think a year after I graduated, him and his uncle, they opened up, it was an old Taco Bell from the 1980s that was closed in. They opened it up as their own little taco place and just kind of, you know, did the same thing that you find at a Taco Bell shop, you know?
Right.
But it was his restaurant, and I still help him. This is back in 1994, and I would go help him. Just to go work with them, you know? Like,
yeah.
You want to come work with me, dude? Help me. I'll tell you how to do it. Just, if you just run the line, I'll run the cash register and I'll help you make the food. I'd never worked in a restaurant ever, in a fast food, let alone fast food at that time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I would go, hey, it's funny, and I go help them. I'm like, yeah, I'll help you out, man. I said, but I'm not driving over to fucking Grand Prairie. And Grand Prairie, for us, we lived in Dallas, it was a good 30-minute hike, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, dude, I'll just come pick you up. I'm like, oh, fuck. I guess I got to go to work, you know? So we go to work, man. I'd do this like a couple of nights a week with him. And then I guess he got tired of it and sold it. But, you know, that's how he met Amy. I think he met Amy at a Taco Bell that he was managing in Grand Prairie. That's how he met her. Or maybe at that taco place that him and his uncle owned.
It was a gas station.
It could have been. It must have been in Grand Prairie because that's where she lived at.
Yeah.
And so he had that going on, and then after that, he did this tanning salon, 10-minute tan. He had 2 locations, one in, both of them were in Dallas, but one in North Dallas, one by White Rock. He had those for, you know, maybe sold that and jumped into the mortgage industry.
Mm-hmm.
But he just always had that feeling, you know. I mean, he didn't know really a whole lot about painting, but he just had the confidence he could do it like any, just as good as anybody else. And in those days, in the early 90s, mid-90s, all of us worked in the painting industry. I worked for the giant Palm Beach Tan. Carlos had his own tanning salon. James had his own tanning salon. And then in 95, 96, I moved to Atlanta, Georgia with my own tanning salon concept with a friend of mine, two friends of mine. And when I moved back, he still had the store, then he sold it. And then he, you know, he found out about the mortgage industry to Ivan. And so he could probably make some money. He decided to do that.
Was Ivan ever, he just worked there, right? He wasn't a business partner.
No, nothing like that. Ivan used to work for Countrywide, I believe. Then he worked for another company where he could work out of his home and, you know, where his commissions were a lot greater. But, you know, I remember James had, you know, he'd been working with his company, and he's like, you know, I'm going to be a branch manager in my own place because I want you and this guy, that guy, I want to come work, and I'll show you how to do it. And all right. And I just got through working at another company called First Plus Financial, which they dealt with refinances and equity loans and stuff like that, but they had went under. So I'm like, well, I knew a little bit enough to go in there and maybe try to do it. But he knew a lot more than the rest of us, James did. So the system was, he's like, dude, why don't you just go out and recruit business and talk to realtors and other places and just tell them we do loans. So that's kind of what we did, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like a spokesperson, if you will, a sales rep.
Wow.
But he always had incredible tenacity. He wasn't aggressive, but he was just his tenacity, his confidence and belief in himself that he could accomplish it. If he envisioned it, he could accomplish it at a greater return. And that's just his mentality. He understood how credit worked at a very early age. You know, where I learned a lot of stuff from him that I just kind of took for granted when I was a teenager and I was 17, 18 years old, you know.
Yeah.
He had already figured out about lenders and borrowers when it comes to automobiles and credit cards and revolving accounts and installment loans. He already knew how that could help you establish credit so you could obviously drive what you want to drive in the future, you know.
Yeah.
All you got to do is make the payments. Don't be lazy. Don't be a cheap ass. And don't not pay these people back, you know?
Right.
And that's what he thought, you know? And that's what got him on the map, you know? And he could negotiate contracts with the landlords, you know, with, you know, obviously for his businesses and such. So there's a lot of things that I felt that, you know, were good for me. And encouraging. I was like, man, here's a guy who didn't go to college, but it's just his sheer will to succeed. And he would just see it through. I mean, nobody held his hand. Nobody told him how to do it. He was just an individual who was gifted with trying to do right to make it work. And he's just going to wing it and figure it out along the way.
Wow. Yeah, James sounded like a really great guy.
And it was impressive. Well, when you're 20 years old, you have your own business. You know, it's impressive, you know?
Very, very.
And, you know, up until his death.
Yeah.
It's just awful, you know? You know, for Ivan to snub the lives of some people for absolutely no reason. If he really wanted the money, you know, if that was what his real was, is to get money for whatever he needed the money for, you know. And I always heard that he had asked James for money and that James had turned him down, you know. It's so fuzzy. I can't remember if I heard that from people or if I in fact heard that from James himself. I can't really truly remember that. However, I think that if he would have just stopped doing the drugs and really come in and humble himself and work diligently with great work ethic, he could have amassed a lot of money in a few months, let alone his mom was a realtor and working the property over in Oak Cliff with 100 loans. I mean, there were going to be 100 homes to be built there, okay? And this is where I think a lot of the jealousy and the enviness came from, is that Sylvia had a friend who was a builder, okay?
Swan?
I'm sorry?
Patrick Swan?
I don't know. I cannot remember what his name was, but he was a contractor or builder, and they had a property, a development in Oak Cliff by Mountain View Community College, and she was going to be the lone realtor on the deal. And, I mean, this is not private information. Anybody can tell you this.
Yeah.
All realtors gain 3% on every loan, okay?
Right.
I mean, 3% of 100,000 is $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
If every house sells for $100,000, I mean, this is simple math. If every home sells for $100,000 and there's 100 of them, right, is that $3 million, I guess?
Yeah.
$3 million. If you take 3% of $3 million, you know what I mean? You're making some jack for her.
Right,
however,
right.
When it was time to get a lender to come in there, there was another fellow that was in there named Ray Sanchez, a really good guy, just an incredible human being. He was already there because he spoke English and Spanish. However, he didn't know anything about loans, and he was just kind of a spokesperson for the bank out of Denton that he was going to get applications, and he was going to give it to the loan officer back in Denton. Well, Sylvia had asked James to come along and help do some of these loans as well, and James and befriended Ray, and, you know, used to kind of make fun of Ray, like, dude, why are you sitting up there all day long taking all these loans back to somebody else so they can make the money? And Ray was getting paid by the hour, and then James just kind of broke it down to him. Just, I mean, you know, you ever had to say, you know, the game is to be told, sold, not to be told. And he showed him, so, look, dude, if you're a loan officer and you do this loan by yourself, this is how much money you can make. And Ray's a very intelligent, college-educated person and extremely well-versed in Spanish and English. So he is very well-educated. And, you know, he was scared to take that plunge, and James gave him the confidence to come on over and work with him, and he would help him. And it was probably one of the best moves that Ray had did. But my point is that Sylvia asked her nephew to come work those loans. She didn't ask her own son, who was already in financial trouble.
Right.
You know, why wouldn't your mom give you this all these loans in a silver platter? She gave them to her nephew instead. And
yeah.
James came in there, and I mean, that really, really made an incredible difference in his success and amassing so much money so quickly. I mean, he was closing loans like crazy over there. And that's just for one property, let alone all the loans that he was getting from realtors and, you know, walk-ins and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, he was making a ton of money. So to say that this guy owed some dude $250,000 and didn't just say, hey, you're making $50,000 a month over here at the mortgage company. 6 months, you can pay us back, and we'll never do business with you again.
Well,
I mean,
he has changed his story. He sent Kelly a recording that basically said that the pizza man wanted him to go work for James and make money.
Oh, no, okay. So, because the pizza man knows Ivan so well?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, doesn't know him from Adam and just going to suggest, hey, why don't you go work with him? Because I know you're a tremendous loan officer.
Basically what it was. Like, I know you can make a lot of money.
You know what I mean? I mean, come on, man. That's,
yeah.
God, that story is awful.
Yeah,
awful.
He really is. Him and his mother.
That's just awful. But, you know, to kind of wrap all this up, you know, I've been knowing James for a long time. Obviously, Kelly was his only sibling, his older sister, and she is married to my cousin, who is about, you know, maybe I'm going to say 5 to 6 years my senior, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so Gilbert is my cousin. His mom and my mom are sisters. And so Gilbert, I grew up with him my whole life, you know? I mean, they're older, but I was always around their house growing up as a little boy. So him and Kelly, you know, they've been dating since high school. So I didn't really know James personally until I went to high school. And we really didn't talk to each other, but we had the one common denominator was that, you know, his sister is married to my cousin. You know, we always knew that.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't really start becoming friends until maybe my sophomore year of high school. And then he was a junior. And we just, you know, we just kind of clicked, you know. We really started hanging out. And then we were in, and when he was a senior and I was a junior, he was in, we were in the work program where you go to school half a day, then you go home and you go work it up. So we were in the same co-op class as well. And, you know, we both get out of school at the same time early. And, man, we just always hung out. You know, in the school, we'd go eat at Popeye's Chicken or Mr. Gaddy's or even Taco Bell, whatever we could afford. And we'd go to his job and go to my job. And, you know, on the weekends, we'd come to my house. I'd go to his house. We'd go to the batting cages or go ride go-karts. And that was just real fun that we used to do, you know, back in those days. And,
sorry, I can't really hear you very well right now.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And a lot of kids, a lot of males, you know, looking back, I'm 47 years old now, so looking back on things, you know, you try to find a way. A lot of people are trying to find their own personal identity, who they are growing up through high school. And I think a lot of times James would come across arrogant to people. And that arrogance was really his confidence and his competitiveness about himself. And it would come across maybe arrogant to some people, you know. And it was just an attestment to his overwhelming confidence. But he had an incredible heart, incredible work ethic. He was a self-starter. He was determined determined to be successful at all costs. You know, when it came to Amy, they were together for, you know, I can't remember how long, maybe 3 years, 4 years, maybe longer, 4 or 5 years. And he was truly committed to her. And he was loyal. He wasn't one of those type of guys or those type of men that leaves his wife at home and, you know, I'm going to go have, you know, I have a late dinner meeting or I have a late business meeting or whatnot. He wasn't that type of individual. You know, anything he would do at nighttime as far as dinner always included her. And occasionally he would call me and, hey, dude, me and Amy are going to go to the casino. If you want to come up and hang out with us, sure, man, I'll go up there and hang out with you, you know. But, you know, he was just committed to her. And to think that on that Friday night that Ivan told him that this dude is going to come get you, to think that he's not going to remove his most prized possession, his wife, out of that home and put her somewhere safe, if there was any legitimacy to this story, is beyond me, you know?
Yeah.
I cannot imagine him saying, I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to sleep here tonight. You park that funky-ass Honda Accord outside. And we're just going to sleep in here and take a chance. That's not going to happen, man.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. It'd be like someone telling you, hey, man, there's bobcats and coyotes in this neighborhood. Don't leave your chihuahua in the backyard all night. And you say, I'm going to leave my dog back there, but I'm going to put a fake dog back there to scare the other dogs off. Come on, man. You're not going to do that. You know, he loved that girl. He was an incredible friend. I loved him. I miss him. I go to his gravesite at least for sure 3 times a year, on his birthday, on her birthday, definitely on November 4th, and any other time I'm in that area, you know, I'll go over there and go right to it and just clean off their graves or little stones that are right there. I get my little towel, my brush, and I brush stuff off and clean it up for them and just hang out for a few minutes, then I take off. And I just remember who he was and how he was and just the fun and his laughs and, you know, the encouragement he used to give me. But he had an incredible heart. And if you knew him, you knew that of him. And, you know, and for these, you know, for this Matt and the Sylvia and everybody to turn this story around that he was just anything other than a good dude, it's just bad, you know.
I'm not having it. I'm not going to let it happen. I've got I'm lucky that I have a platform now because of my parents' case.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Matt saw that and he was trying to take advantage of it. And, you know, Ivan has, you know, he took Amy's life. He turned her into a victim. He took James's life. He's a victim. He's victimizing Kelly, and she's still alive, and he's torturing her, you know, with all of this mess. And, you know, it feels like he's victimized women all of his life.
Those women will tell you. And I'm going to tell you, you know, I know James was shot twice, and Amy was shot four times.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what a revolver would hold, 6 bullets, right? But to shoot her 4 times, I've always felt over the years that he always had a little bit more animosity and hatred towards her because she knew of his violence against women. And I can remember back in 97 or 96, James and Amy shared an apartment with Ivan. And I want to say that at that house, I can't remember who the girl was that was living there. Maybe the Michelle was, I think that was her name, Michelle, his first wife. I mean, he had bruised her up pretty bad. I think Amy had told James, hey, man, he can't live here or we can't live here. We're not going to live here, you know, and just see this kind of stuff going on, you know.
Yeah.
And they would get into it, you know. She was kind of sassy, and she's going to say what's on her mind, but with good reason. You know, you can't just be whooping up on women or talking bad to them. And he was notorious for it. And he was a little dude. You know, he's about 5'7", 5'7", 5'8". You know, he couldn't punch his way out of a paper bag. You know, I mean, he'd look for everybody else for security, you know. And this is kind of like for physical security or maybe give himself confidence that, okay, now he's around some fellas, you know. But, man, you know, it's just unfortunate that this is what it's come down to. And it's been this long. And we're still fighting this case. And they're coming up with these wild scenarios and these possible this web of suspects that it could be. And, man, the detectives did their job, and if they heard that story, I mean, they hear hundreds of confessions and hundreds of alibis. They know what's real and what's not real, you know. And to say that some dude come up in your house with a gun, threaten your life, threaten your cousin, your beloved cousin, and you don't do nothing about it, you don't tell nobody. Come on, man. That part right there, that's what kind of seals it for me. For him to never give anybody forewarning for their life, but you wait the day of, and your best solution, your best thinking is to go park a Honda Accord out front. But I'm going to drive your Corvette, I mean the Mercedes. Oh, the tire's flat. I'm going to bring it right back. Really? Come on, man. That's just that doesn't make sense. He was joyriding those cars, perhaps. I don't know. It's just, it doesn't add up. I'm not trying to hear anything less that somebody else did it. That dude is guilty. And maybe that Amy Betcher at that time, she was probably 21, 22 years old. She's a young kid. There's nobody, I don't think so at least, a young girl who moved down here all the way from, was it Wisconsin or Minnesota?
Yeah, Minnesota.
Who just comes down here a couple months, you meet this lunatic, and then you're going to concoct a story to the police, and this is what you saw without them knowing? I mean, you know, you can't come up with that kind of stuff.
Right.
I don't think so.
No,
and
I think
telling
the truth.
Yeah, and I think, you probably know this, I mean, anytime there's a murder scene, a crime scene, there's going to be information in that crime scene, information in that murder scene that's going to be withheld from the general public. Details that only the detectives and the first responders are going to see, and they're obviously not going to leak that information out. So I'm sure whenever they spoke to her and she told them about those bodies and how they were laying down and where were they positioned at, nobody in the world could give you that information without them firsthand being there. That's what sealed it for them. You don't know how these bodies were there until you go to court when you go to trial. And that is when the information is obviously exposed, you know.
Well,
but all that
medical examiner got it a little bit wrong. I don't think they died at the same time.
No, I mean, as far as maybe how the bodies were positioned.
Oh, yeah,
know?
Yeah. I do have, like, Matt gave me all of that, which he really shouldn't have done.
I mean, nobody knows that, you know? Nobody.
Yeah.
All you know is there's two dead bodies in the master bedroom. You don't know where they were at, if they were on the toilet, in the shower, if they were hugging each other, if they were execution style. Nobody knows that information. And for Amy Betcher to sit there with two detectives and tell them exactly what she saw and how they were laying down.
Yeah, there's no way.
That puts you at the scene of the crime.
Right.
That makes you a Bible witness. And then if she said, "This is what brought me over here," shit, man, that's a done deal.
Yeah.
You got to get over that, Ivan. That's a done deal, buddy.
Well,
you brought that woman over there, and she revealed to the detectives that only they knew. Nobody else knew that but her.
Yeah. No, Ivan is exactly where he needs to be. I just think he wasn't alone in what he did.
Yeah, and I don't think, I mean, we've always speculated, ooh, what if it was Eric involved, you know? Like, man, because he was a weird little, I don't know that he had the gall to do anything like that. I mean, not that Ivan had the gall, but, you know, Eric was he's a weird little dude, man. He was very shy, he's an introvert. Just an introvert, quiet, shy, just weird, you know. He's just a weird dude. Now, Amy Metra's brother, I've never met this guy. There may be some, you know, could be something there, or it could be none of those people at all, and it could be some dope fiend, you know, dope fiend hanging with the dope fiend and say, "Hey, man, my cousin's got some money." You know, and then this guy puts him up to it and says, "Hey, well, let's go rob your cousin's house to get some money. We can get high."
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go do that. And then they go over there, and lo and behold, they're still there, and now you're forced to shoot them. I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of different ways to look at that. But one thing for sure, and two things are certain, the fingerprints belong to Ivan and is on that pistol. The DNA belonged to James. It's on that pistol. And that pistol was found in that woman's apartment.
Yep.
And there ain't no damn John Travolta or Steven Seagal delivering pizzas at 4 o'clock in the afternoon in a goddamn Lincoln.
Did Ivan ever deliver pizzas?
Not that I know of. He may have. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, the only little oddball job that I knew he had was that one at Super Silence.
So when was he working in real estate?
I'm going to tell you maybe like 1995, 96, 97, somewhere in there. Or maybe 96, 97, 98, 99, somewhere in there.
Okay.
Late 90s.
But not when he was with Amy.
Amy Betcher?
Yeah.
He's working at Super Salads.
Yeah. Well, he made it sound like he had both jobs, like Super Salads is a part-time job, but... obviously, the trial transcript doesn't reflect that.
I don't know for sure if he worked anywhere else, but by his own admission,
yeah,
he was at Super Salads, you know. Now, he used to work at Super Salads years before, so I think he went back because he knew that was a place he could make quick money.
Have you ever heard the name Francisco Enriquez?
No.
Okay. Okay. Well, I really appreciate you, like, taking the time to talk, you know, to talk to me and tell me all this stuff. I'm sure you've said this 100 times and you're just ready to put it to rest.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, all this negative criticism and all these negative stories that are coming up on James and Amy, it's just unfair to the dead, you know? It's extremely unfair to them and totally unfair for the families of those victims.
Yeah.
It's just unfair, and for him and his mother, and the other co-conspirators to have the audacity to keep beating his dead horse—no pun intended—you know, it's an atrocity. It's awful. This man is guilty.
I was wondering if you wouldn't mind, like, I know you sent something to Kelly to share, you know, because I wanted to do an episode where we only talked about James and Amy and who they were. And I was just wondering if you wouldn't mind, like, maybe reading that into like a voice note or something that you could send me later.
like a voice clip or something?
Yeah.
And then just, like, record it and send it to you?
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind, you know, just things you remember about James, you know, your favorite memories of him, things that made you laugh, things you missed, things you wish people would know. I just want them to know who they really were and not what Ivan is trying to say or what picture he's trying to paint.
Right. Yeah, I can do something like that.
I really appreciate that.
Certainly.
And I also, last thing, I don't know if you wouldn't mind passing my number along to Carlos.
Okay.
I would love to talk to him as well. You know, I don't need a lot of his time, but I'd also like to hear just some of his memories with James as well.
Okay. Because
Kelly and Gilbert, they both recorded something for me, and I'd like to have some of his friends say stuff as well.
Okay. Yeah, I can do that.
Thank you.
No problem.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again. I really appreciate
it. You're welcome.
I hope you have a good night.
Thank you. You do the same.
All right, you take care. Bye.
All right, bye.